Commission Workforce Development for Thursday, May 17, day before Mount St. Helens Day. Let's open a public hearing on House Bill 2853. Janet.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2853 establishes that a person may not acquire property by adverse possession if it is the property is owned by a railroad or used for railroad operation. This is at the request of the Central Oregon and Pacific Railroad, and Representative Morgan is the sponsor.
Okay, I'm a little nervous. I got four people signed up on a bill that has one line on it, so this bill could be talked into death, but so keep that in mind. Let me ask that Susan Morgan come forward. And anybody else that wants to come forward with her, John, Kevin, or Jane, if that's necessary, you may come at this point. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the record, my name is Susan Morgan. I'm State Representative from House District 2. And for your legislating pleasure, I'm bringing you what may be the shortest bill you will view this session. And what this bill does very simply is just protect the right-of-ways from permanent encroachment for the railroad system. And the folks that are sitting behind me can probably give you way more information than you want on this bill and answer any questions. And if there are no questions for me, I will clear out and let them have this table.
Okay, thank you, Representative Morgan. Let's see. Why don't we do this? Why don't we ask for the one of the three of you that is most knowledgeable, and then if that is not adequate, we'll have the other two come forward. Is that a proper use of our time?
I'm most knowledgeable, and I actually have some written testimony.
Thank you.
It's been prepared.
Welcome.
Which I'm not going to read to you because I don't want to waste your time. Certainly.
We have questions. We can always get deeper here.
My name is Jane Yates. I'm an attorney, and we represent Central Oregon Pacific Railroad. This bill is important because it protects the integrity of railroad rights-of-way throughout Oregon. Just to give you a really brief historical background, most of the railroad rights-of-way in Oregon were granted through congressional grant. However, there were some instances when private property owners granted portions of the right-of-way, and there is case law which protects those portions of the right-of-way that were granted through congressional grant, but there is nothing that protects against adverse possession for portions of the right-of-way that were given through private grant. So this bill would clean all that up. There's a number of other states that have protected railroad rights-of-way either through their constitutions or statutorily. And we're just trying to do the same in Oregon.
Okay. Well, thank you, Ms. Yates. Now, usually we have bills because there has been a situation or an incident that occurred. Did we have an incident that might illustrate the...
We don't have a particular... Well, I can give you what you mean as far as giving you an example for...
where adverse possession may have been claimed and...
I don't have a specific factual example, but I can give you an analogy. The railroad rights-of-way vary in widths throughout the state, the railroad doesn't necessarily use the entire right-of-way at this point in time. In a lot of rural areas, ranchers or farmers may encroach upon the right-of-way, and we're just trying to protect the integrity of the entire right-of-way.
Okay. Do we have questions for Ms. Yates?
Good bill. Simple bill.
Okay. Close public hearing, open a work session. House Bill 2853.
Chair, I move the bill to the floor to do pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2853 to the floor to do pass recommendation. Discussion? Objection? Supporter, Mark Senator Deckard has excused. Who'd like to carry the bill?
Chair.
Senator Starr will carry. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. We have four members now. So, let me get back to my scriptola. Give that to you. I guess this will be your script. What bill is this now? Open up a possible reconsideration, House Bill 2075.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 2075.
Okay. Senator Starr has moved the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 2075. Any objection? All right. So ordered.
Mr. Chair, having voted on the prevailing side, move to reconsider the vote by which we passed House Bill 2075.
Okay, Senator Starr has moved that having voted on the prevailing side, which is to reconsider the vote by which we passed House Bill 2075. Any objection? Order. Okay.
Mr. Chair, we have a -1 amendment. It's a conflict amendment to the bill. I move the -1 amendment to House Bill 2075.
Okay, Senator Starr has moved the -1.
Session.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Has moved the dash one amendment to House Bill 2075. Janet, conflict amendment only, correct?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Conflict amendment only. Section 6 says if House Bill 2076 becomes law, then the name changes are made. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any discussion on the conflict amendment? Any objections for its adoption? So ordered.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move House Bill 2075 as amended to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2075 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. Whoever we had carry it before will still be the carrier this time. Anything on that, Janet?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Let's open up a public hearing on House Bill 2472.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2472, and you should have the A in gross bill, creates a 17-member task force on extending Washington County commuter rail to Salem. It specifies membership on the committee representing local governments, the Portland and Western Railroad, TriMet, and the Department of Transportation, as well as four legislators and a representative from the 5th Congressional District. Task force is asked to submit their report and recommendations in the bill no later than October 1st, 2008. Staffing for the task force would be by the Legislative Administration Committee, and the committee would sunset at the beginning of the next regular biennial legislative session. You have a fiscal impact statement, and the bill does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you, Janet. Representative Greenlick, I believe you're here for this bill, correct, though?
Oh, no. I just read the amendment.
We'll get to that later. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlick, House District 33, which is north half Northwest Portland, half Washington County, out to about North Plains. We're about to open a Washington County commuter rail line from Wilsonville to Beaverton, connecting with TriMet and the Beaverton Transit Mall. And that's pretty exciting for us in Washington County. We've been working on that for a long time. But the reality of it was that bill, that rail line began a long journey that started in about 1995 and had about nine steps, local, state, and federal, to pass through before it became a reality. As we think about the Washington County commuter rail, it becomes obvious that it's actually easier to extend that rail line from Wilsonville to Salem than it was to create the original line. And there are a lot of people that are pretty interested in considering the extent to which that might be a feasible option. For example, folks in Kaiser imagine that they can possibly become a bedroom community for the industrial development activity that's going on in Wilsonville now. Folks in Salem imagine what I-5 is going to be like 12 or 13 years from now when this rail line might actually be operational. 2020. Imagine what I-5 is going to be like, considering that we're not really able to make the kind of investments we need in creating the infrastructure for I-5 that allow traffic to flow freely by the year 2020. You can imagine getting on a lovely train. If I have permission to use a visual. I think I have a visual here somewhere. Get on a lovely self-prepared train that looks like that, and from downtown Salem end up at the Portland Airport in perhaps an hour and a half, which seems slow to us now, except on Friday afternoon. And will seem remarkably fast, I believe, in 2020. So what you have in front of you is a bill for the very first step of a very long process to get all the folks together, the mayors of Wilsonville and Donald and Kaiser and Woodburn and Salem, get the transit authorities together, get some folks from the congressional offices together, and start asking whether this thing, A, makes sense, whether it's something the communities would desire, whether at the broadest level it's feasible, and whether to begin to move into a very long and complicated process to make this come to life. That's all I have to say. I think it would be a great thing to begin to start talking about.
Okay, thank you, Representative. By the way, colleagues, we have a written testimony from John Charles, who signed up but is not apparently here, but did leave written testimony that Janet is passing out. Questions for Representative Greenlee?
I have a question.
Yes, Senator Starr.
I'm not sure this is necessary because, you know, we've got the opening of the West Side commuter rail here coming up shortly. We never had a task force like this put together to bring that about. And that line obviously was only in one county, but still went through several cities. And those folks, it was the mayors, I believe, that really drove that conversation to begin with, and then brought, I think, former representative, currently county chair Tom Bryan, to the table and championed that. So, do we really need to create another task force and spend $67,000 when couldn't this be done kind of in an ad hoc kind of fashion, where these guys and well, these people get together to work on this issue and bring it along that way?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, I've got the timetable from the Washington County Commuter Rail Line, and it actually started in 95-96 with a set of local government officials working to begin to discuss this. They moved from there into the fatal flaw analysis, which came next. The purpose of the task force is simply to consolidate those discussions and make sure that they actually happen. Yes, conceivably, we could wait for chance and see whether the mayor of Donald and the mayor of Wilsonville got together with the mayor of Kaiser and started talking about it. But this is simply to create a facilitated environment where that conversation can take place and to find out whether it does, in a formal sense, make sense to move to the next step. It is analogous to the 95-96 discussions, which in Washington County were I assume guided by somebody, but I'm not sure who.
I think, Mr. Chair, mm-hmm. I think that current Representative Crummell was then the mayor of Wilsonville. I think he was one of the leading proponents that worked really hard to make this commuter rail in Washington County a reality, and obviously moved from where he was to where he is and has continued to champion the rail line. So.
Yes, he's a significant supporter of this bill as well.
Thank you. Other questions for Representative Greenlee? Senator George.
Thank you, Representative, for being here. I guess right. I have huge reservations about this particular piece of legislation, and what it comes down to is that rail so far has been very difficult to pencil out in our region due to densities. They don't have them. And the Wilsonville to the rest of Northwest Washington County hasn't opened yet, and so we'll be anticipating what will happen when that happens. We're talking about taking a commuter rail through farmland for some 35 miles with no densities, and we have bus lines that already serve that route that are underutilized already. I'm trying to figure out how it would be ever possible, based on any experience, any previous justification on rail, how this could even be something that would be worth studying. I mean, you could almost take a rail line anywhere else where there's a town that you wouldn't be going across 40-some-odd miles of farmland with no densities whatsoever. I was wondering how this became on the radar screen for consideration.
Mr. Chair, Senator George, the density is on both ends of the line rather than in the middle of the line in this case. And in fact, in the original proposal, we didn't have Woodburn and Donald, and they came to us specifically and asked to be added because they thought when you're talking about 10 and 15 years hence that, say, Woodburn might become much more of a population center that would affect this. The fact is, what makes this logical is it's technically an easier thing to do. There's right away there, there's rail line there. In the Wilsonville to Beaverton thing, we ended up buying, I think, about five, had to buy about 5 miles of right away, very expensive land at the north end. The prediction is, my prediction is, and others, that the ridership estimates will be exceeded right from the very get-go, as they have been in West Side Max and in almost, and in North Side Max, basically all of the Max, and Airport Max, all the lines. And we expect this will be exceeded as well. So the real issue is connecting Beaverton to Salem, and the Beaverton, Tiger, Tualatin, and Wilsonville to Salem, and the other way around. It's not based on the population estimates of Donald and even Woodburn now.
If I could, I guess that's sort of my point is that to make any of those previous lines that you mentioned pencil out, what we ended up doing was shutting down the express buses from Gresham into Portland, from the west side into Portland, and turning our express buses to feeder lines to the light rail. The commuters numbers don't pencil out as well as even some of the light rail numbers do, and so I'm trying to figure out, do we shut down the current buses that we have between Wilsonville and Salem to make this work, and then why would we do... I'm having a hard time getting to the point where why we would study something. We have so many transportation needs in front of us. I mean, we have piles and piles of transportation needs, in especially in that region, why this would be an option when you can almost see from right away that the study would come up with almost no way this would be feasible.
Well, it depends. Excuse me. Mr. Chair, Senator George. It really depends on what you think is going to be happening to I-5 in the next 15 years. And I think the notion is that I-5 is becoming difficult to get from, say, Salem to the Portland airport. For example, on a Friday afternoon, we were trying to figure out how much time it would take us. We calculated we better make sure we leave 2 hours on the road for that on this coming Friday afternoon. It depends on what you think is going to happen with I-5 and the extent to which offloading commuter traffic from I-5 onto a rail line has enormous value. And I think that's one of the things that we need to be looking at this step and at the next step, where the feasibility really would become a hard pencil to see if it's worth moving on. You have one assumption on how it's going to pencil, and I have a different one. And the way to look at it is to get a formal process and say let's take a look at it.
Okay. Any other questions?
Just a comment, Mr. Chair. I think this is visionary. I truly believe this is good legislation. I take a look at what they said about Max coming to Gresham. Good grief, you know. They're way out there in Gresham, and, you know, there are already buses. And by gum, we got it going, and it is extremely well used. And then if you've done any travel in Europe, I mean, rail is the mode of transportation, and I truly feel it's a good mode of transportation, and I would just rather have more people using rail than the cars. And I know we're going to renewable energy, but I truly feel that this is in the best interest of Oregon, our natural resources, all the way around. Thank you.
Thank you. Richard Greenland, do you know if this is in the co-chair's budget? I know it's not in the governor's budget, since it's federal funding.
It's not in the co-chair's budget. This is the proposal is to have the legislative administrative staff this committee. So my assumption would be, after talking to them, that there are a set of things proposed for legislative administrative, and the ultimate decision is made by the legislative administrative committee as to which of the various proposals to be managed by legislative administrative actually will happen.
Okay. Did you happen to see the -2 amendment that I have to this bill?
And I really like the -2 amendments.
I have not seen it.
The -2 amendment is truly visionary.
The -2 amendment, Representative Greenlick, is that, you know, we, with the 2040 plan in the metro area, all the growth is set to go east, out towards my district, Damascus, Gresham. And so the -2 amendment actually deletes Salem and inserts Welch's. I figured, you know, that this might be...
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Stark.
And then with the tram from Welch's up to government camp?
Well, I thought the ski lift from Portland to Welch's.
It is an integrated system, so thank you. Does anybody else wish to testify? Did you wish to testify in this bill?
Sure.
Come on forward. Go ahead, you can stay there, Representative, if you want. And
be harassed by the chair.
Welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Kelsey Wilson representing the Oregon Transit Association, and I am just now seeing the amendments and have a few comments. Sandy System, Transit Systems, one of our best systems and members of our association, and we think it's only logical that we continue to provide mass transit up the mountain, and wherever mass transit, you know, as a general rule, the Oregon Transit Association supports more mass transit. And with this amendment, maybe even John Charles would support this bill. So.
Actually, one of my constituents up in San Diego, he rides. It's always an interesting deal. John does ride the. Okay, well, thank you very much. Well, we have the Dash 2 amendment for Welch's, Salem. I don't know. Which way do you think we should go?
I wish it was both.
Yeah, well, we only got the one amendment, so.
Support that.
Just so, because we are in the throes of the legislative session, I won't do the Dash 2 amendment right now. We'll close the public hearing, open a work session. This bill has a referral to Ways and Means. I think we'll give the opportunity for those folks to discuss this. Open the work session on House Bill 2472.
Mr. Chair, I would move the bill to Ways and Means.
Okay. Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2472 to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Can I make a comment, Mr.
Yes.
Chair? Motion's on the floor. I just make the comment that I had a conversation day before yesterday with a former staffer that used to work in this building that still lives in Salem but works in Portland. He, for $160 today, buys a month pass to ride Amtrak from Salem into Portland. $160, you can do that today. People that want to commute via rail today from Salem to Portland can do it for $160, monthly pass. And from his conversation to me, there's 12 to 15 regular commuters that utilize that current rail. So I'm not sure if this is additive or duplicative, but I'm willing to send a bill down to Ways and Means and have them duke it out down there.
Okay. Sure. Yeah. We sparked all kinds of things. Senator Monis Anderson.
I actually have staff that former staff that tried to use the commuter between Portland and Salem, and sometimes it was late getting into Portland by a couple hours. Sometimes leaving from Salem, they had to wait an hour or so, and so it wasn't that reliable. So as a true commuter train, it needs to be beefed up.
Senator George.
Just kind of adding to what we're talking about staffers, my staff has a monthly pass on the Smart Chariot co-op that works very, very well between Wilsonville and Salem, and we carpool most days, but on days we don't, they use that. There's three buses. One of them's full. I wish they would move one of them closer to the times where people need to get down here, because I think it'd be utilized more, but here we have an incredibly flexible system, and I cannot see why we continue to replace buses with rail. It just seems to get so incredibly expensive, so I'll be voting no on this.
Okay. Thank you. Regardless of what happens down in Ways and Means, I mean, I think, in seriousness, it's an issue we definitely want to talk about. I do think Mr. Charles' comments regarding SMART and what Senator George has said, that they do have a commuter that goes down to Salem, they would be an important part of that discussion in terms of the volume of rides, what the potential is, what the demand is, and how that works. That's one way to provide additional service, and because there is experience there doing the same thing. So regardless of what the bill does in Ways and Means, I think this would be a good topic for the Interim Committee on Transportation, which is going to be convening anyway, to discuss and have some of those people at the table, and I'm sure we will do that.
Mr. Chair, yeah. I guess my point is I'd rather spend $67,000 promoting the current very effective transportation system than studying something that would replace a very effective program. So thank you.
Yeah, and like I say, we'll have those discussions. Okay. Any objection besides Senator George to go to Ways and Means with this bill?
That's without recommendation.
No objection? All right. So the bill's on its way. And we'll let Senator Representative Greenlick have his discussions down there with the 5,000 other bills. Excuse me?
Deckard's excuse.
Yeah, Deckard's excuse, please. Yes, thank you. Let's open up public hearing on House Bill 3377. Janet, dismantle me.
Chair, House Bill 3377 was sponsored by the House Committee on Transportation. You should have the A engrossed bill. The bill authorizes the Department of Transportation to impose sanctions on vehicle dismantlers for violation of dismantler requirements. Right now, as you can see on the top of page 2 of the bill, the department is limited right now to revoking a dismantler certificate. There's other sanctions that could be applied, and those would be developed by rule under the bill, as you can see, again, in Section 2. The bill also requires a surrender of a vehicle title or other ownership documents on record within 30 days of acquisition of a vehicle for dismantling. And there's minimal fiscal impact. No statement was issued. Thank you.
I assume we're talking about legal dismantlers here. We have one person set to testify, Daryl Fuller. Welcome, Daryl.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Daryl Fuller on behalf of the Northwest Auto Trades Association. Dismantler business started working with the legislature to regulate its own industry a couple of sessions ago. The original legislation limited by statute the kind of sanctions that DMV could impose on dismantlers, and it was discovered as things were implemented that both the dismantlers and the DMV would like some latitude in how they deal with the industry in terms of the degree of violations and the ability of DMV to work with the industry to rehabilitate and educate the dismantlers. And so this simply provides an opportunity for DMV and the dismantlers to get together during the interim, write some rules that make sense, and would allow DMV the same kind of flexibility they have with other businesses they regulate, such as auto dealers, to make the sanctions fit the crime, if you will. It went through a task force at DMV and has their support. We're not aware of any opposition to the bill, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Fuller. Questions for Mr. Fuller? Okay. We do have the department here. Does the department have any reason? Just the thumbs up, you know, from Jack in the back of the room? If not, that's closed public hearing. Open work session on House Bill 3377.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3377 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 3377 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objection. So ordered. Please mark Senator Deckard as excused. Anybody want to carry this bill? Senator George, please. Thank you very much. Okay. Open up public hearing on House Bill 2821. Janet.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2821. You should have A engrossed version. At the request of Randy Kraftis by Representative Richardson, permits a motor vehicle hauling or towing two implements of husbandry to operate on a highway. We are going to have pictures of what that looks like, and there is an amendment that I'm going to pass out. That's an emergency clause. Today, would add an emergency clause to the bill and take effect on passage. And
this one's a real amendment, by the way.
I like yours.
It's the dash A2 amendment.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Schnellenberg and Mr. Jensen, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Don Schnellenberg representing Oregon Farm Bureau with me, agriculture producer Carl Jensen from Silverton area. In your packet also is another picture of the situation that Mr. Jensen deals with, and also an email from ODOT recommending the language for the change. This is a gut and stuff bill that was gut and stuffed on the House side, so it comes to you as a clean bill, in fact. And for some 10 to 15 years, Mr. Jensen has been operating this in this manner. The situation is that he has a truck, and he has a swamp buggy that he puts on a trailer, and then he also has a grain drill that he pulls behind the swamp buggy that he uses for overseeding parts of the fields that are drowned out and that kind of thing. Any of you who ever towed a grain drill, Senator George likely has. I don't know, maybe Senator Starr has as well. But they have fairly large tires, and they're fairly light, and so they bounce around quite a bit. The large tires are kind of for flotation, so they kind of bounce around. And so in order to make this a safer situation, Mr. Jensen built a dolly that hydraulically he can put right underneath his grain drill, and makes it a whole lot safer as he moves it down the road. But the problem was, what the current law provides is that you can tow two implements of husbandry, up to two implements of husbandry. And so as long as the grain drill was on the ground, then he was legal. But when he built Dolly and made it safer, then he became illegal, technically. And so he contacted ODOT, and the office recommended some language that would change that, that would provide that you can haul or tow two implements of husbandry, and that would put him back in business. I would also say we have suggested there the dash or the dash one amendments. Dash two amendments. Yeah.
Okay.
A2, yeah. Amendments that would add emergency clause to this. Most of his work is done between now and the end of the year, and so it would be a great benefit if we could put emergency clause on, make this effective immediately, so he can get the grain drill back up off of the off of the highway and on to a safer mode of transportation. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, or if you have questions, Mr. Jensen, he'd be happy to answer those as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Schellenberg. Mr. Jensen, do you have any comments you'd like to make there?
Well, we didn't know he was illegal. We've been doing this about for 15 years or more, and I did had this dolly built that slides in underneath the drill, and which makes it easier. You can pull off the road farther and stay out of the traffic a little more. And this the waymaster said we were not legal, so he gave us a ticket the other day. And we never heard about it because we went through many scales and they, no problem, they never checked us, they waved us on through, and so this was really a shock to me when I heard this.
Yeah, how long ago did you get your ticket?
It was about 4 weeks ago.
Yeah, how much was it?
$97.
Have you paid it yet?
Well, I went down, and the waymaster made a mistake, and he kept the ticket in his pocket or in his vehicle, and when I went to pay, and he made a... On the front of the ticket, it says go to the Salem court. On the back of the ticket, it says go to Woodburn. So I went to Woodburn, and they didn't have no copy of the ticket there. And they called Salem. They didn't have a copy of the ticket. So the waymaster Tuesday handed the ticket to the judge, and so I went yesterday in to pay it, and they put a warning on it.
Ah, there you go. There you go.
So I was lucky.
There you go. All right. Well, thank you very much. Any questions for our guests? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You betcha. Close public hearing. Open a work session. House Bill 2821.
Mr. Chairman, the dash A2 amendment to House Bill 2821.
Okay. Senator Starr has moved the dash A2 amendments to House Bill 2821. Discussion? Objection? Order.
Mr. Chair, I move the House Bill 2821 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2821 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. Please mark Senator Decker's excuse. Senator George, because your family's farming, I'm going to ask you to carry this bill. If there's any questions, you would be the one that could answer those better than I. Colleagues, Senator Starr, you're gone Monday and Thursday next week. We have...
Monday and Thursday.
So we have about five meetings left. Is that correct? We have five meetings left. And I'm going to ask Janet if you could circulate to the members our tentative schedule of bills, and as you know, the House is still voting House bills out. So, but the schedule is huge, and the reality is that we're not going to get to all the bills, even if we want to, because it's just the time constraint. We may have to have one night meeting. We don't want to. Here's an idea of what it kind of looks like, you know. So we may have one night meeting to try and do things, but. We're just going to have to really try to kind of look at this stuff. So what I ask is that everybody, when you kind of get the schedule for Janet, take a look at it, kind of make any notes that you might have, and we'll do the best we can for our colleagues' stuff to get through. But it's they're very prolific on the other side of the building. All right, we're adjourned.